On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I hate to be Mr. Like, you know, we gave it a good run. But when you take on Cleveland and you win 2 out of 3, I think you can't be too upset about dropping the third game today, right? Right, Dan? I mean, not me being too Pollyanna-ish.
No. I mean, would you have loved to get the sweep? Absolutely. But look, we were talking about this last week. You looked ahead at these last 6 games, 3 in New York, 3 against Cleveland. Both teams have kind of had the Twins' numbers recently. The Twins take 4 out of 6 of those games. So you just move on. You're great.
The Twins are currently 2.5 games out of the division-leading White Sox of the American League Central. Yeah. I mean, they're not. If you're thinking that the Twins are going to dump Joe Ryan, are going to ask Byron Buxton for a trade,
that's for sure not happening.
No way. No way. And we'll see if fans start showing up in larger numbers, right? Because it's some fun baseball. It just is. And bullpen weakness, yes.
Yeah, there's no question there's bullpen weakness, but what you also love to see with this team is even if they get down a few runs, they're not out of it by a long shot. This offense will keep swinging the sticks and keep scoring runs.
It's surprising.
It's fun. It's fun to watch, and yeah, this team should be in it. This is a team that should be buying come trade deadline. You know, we're not going to add massive pieces. They're not going to go out and get a Tariq Skubal or anything like that. But can you get some bullpen help? Could you get another right-handed bat? Yeah, you could do those things. Make some moves on the periphery and solidify this lineup. And then you hope you get some people back off the injured list and see what happens.
We have a lot to talk about today on Drive Time. If you exist on social media at all, have seen that today was the drop of the new fair foods for the Minnesota State Fair. Yeah, I know. It's not like anyone has posted any sort of social media videos or anybody's written any trolly kind of food critic style. I would never. We're going to speak with one of the new vendors at the State Fair, a young guy who grew up here in Minnesota and now gets to have his brand at the Minnesota State Fair. We'll do that at 4:35. What I want to talk about right now is the biggest issue that's going to affect the way you vote come election time. And maybe by come election time, I'm talking about right now with the primary elections going on, early voting in effect. But we've got a primary coming up in August. We have a general coming up in November. And what politicians are saying when they're knocking on doors is there are 2 things people are talking about. And I want you to pick a side, pick an issue. Is fraud in Minnesota going to be your big issue when it comes time to vote, or is it the fallout from the immigration surge, Operation Metro Surge? 651-461-9226. Because these are the issues, right? And it's I have an answer. Dan probably has an answer as to which issue is going to be a bigger factor come election day. For me, it's fraud. It is fraud. Who do I trust to clean things up and prevent fraud in the state of Minnesota? That is my number one issue. I think for some, I know for some, people are looking for someone who's going to fight and stand up to another potential Operation Metro Surge. I suppose for me, I'm running a bit of a calculus there that the odds of a repeat of what happened here in Minnesota are low. And the odds of having fraud take advantage of the generosity of Minnesotans, I would say, are higher. And after the last, 6 years of feeling like government in Minnesota was not that interested in the details of governing, I want competence. I want professionalism. And that is more important to me than political ideology. Frankly, it's more important to me than the politics of the people that I'm voting for, period. Who do I trust to safeguard and restore trust in our state? That's where I'm at. How about you? 651-461-9226. Cindy is with us. Cindy, first of all, do you agree that these are probably the big two issues for most voters today?
Yes, I do agree with that.
Yeah. Which one is going to resonate more for you? Which is the bigger issue?
Immigration.
Tell me why.
I feel that right now, with Trump in office, the Republican Party is just following along with whatever it is that he wants. He wants to be heavy on immigration. I was not supportive of any of the tactics that ICE used on Minnesota residents. To me, hurting people, removing them from their families, sending them to countries they've never been to, is much more, the humanity of it is much more important to me than people committing fraud.
Yeah.
Only because there is fraud going on in Republican states, and I don't see anything about on the news or anywhere else. It's probably on there. I just haven't seen it. About fraud in other states. I just don't see it as big as they've expanded it and used it as a talking point in Minnesota. I feel that's what it is a talking point. But I think pulling people away, the inhumanity, that's more important to me than a talking point.
What would a politician, what are you looking for, Cindy? Like, what do you want to hear from a politician to give you confidence that they would prevent something like this from happening again?
I want to hear that they're going to do what they say they're going to do, not make a bunch of promises and then lie to the people and not make good on the promises that they make. I want them to be genuine and honest and forthright. When you ask them a question, I want a specific answer to that question, not the deflect and move on and say something that's completely different and talk about something else. I don't want that deflection. I want an honest, forthright answer, even if it's not one that I don't want to hear. Mm. I'd rather have an honest answer that I don't want to hear than someone be dishonest with me and tell me what I want to hear.
Cindy, you and I are cut from the same cloth on that one, let me tell you. No doubt. Give me the straight answer. Give me how you really feel about things, not how you think it's going to be the, you know, play best with the audience. I really want to know what you're planning. I do want to hear more specifics when we hear people say, I'm going to fight President Trump. Okay. Well, if you're in the majority, maybe you have some power. But what do you mean? Like, what is your plan? And then what is your forward-looking plan, too, right? Like, just saying I'm going to fight on immigration, I would like to know, what is the fix? What is the solution? How do we make it so we don't have so many people in this sort of in this limbo state where we have people now, people who would be terrific citizens of this country? I'd like to get them to be citizens, you know?
I would like to see that. I would like to see there be, and I don't know how it happens, but get to be more immigration judges. So some of these people, some of these people have been waiting 30 years to get in front of an immigration judge, and they've done nothing wrong in those 30 years except come here illegally to have a better way of life. And they haven't done anything wrong, and they've got families, and children are here, and they were born here, and yet they're getting picked up and thrown away to another country and have to figure it out for themselves. I don't agree with that, and I want to hear how somebody is going to fix that.
Cindy, thank you. Appreciate the call. Very good. 651-461-9226. Immigration or fraud is sort of the question. And I think it's the question a lot of people are going to be faced with when they vote. Now, a lot of people are just voting. You're voting Republican or you're voting Democrat, and that's it. But I think there are many of us who do want to analyze, especially in the primary level, like who do you trust on these issues? Milt is in Minneapolis. Milt, thanks for listening. Which one of these issues is bigger for you?
Fraud. I live in Minneapolis and Atlanta, but only Atlanta like 2 to 3 months, but most of the time Minneapolis.
Sounds kind of shady to me, Mel. Sounds a little fraudulent.
I'm a military veteran. I haven't done anything goofy in my whole life. Yeah. Honorable discharge. And
missed out. You missed out, it seems. There was money for the taking around here, that's for sure. No, yeah. Go ahead. Talk a little bit more about why that's your issue.
All right. Here we have a guy that's an Army officer and a businessman. And I don't think he's getting much play. And that would be the cure for Minnesota, because this stuff the last 6 years hasn't worked. And people can see it. And this fraud is the number one issue by far. And it doesn't make sense to lose our tax money to just total nonsense.
What do you want to see that would give you some reassurance that somebody would be competent to root out the fraud?
I just told you. You know who I'm talking about, Kendall Qualls.
Oh, yeah.
And Tafoya would be great, too, because, you know, here's what we've had just isn't working. You know, between Walz, Omar, this whole, you know, clan of, why would we want to recycle this stuff? It doesn't work.
Do you trust Kendall Qualls more than Lisa Damith on the fraud issue?
I kind of do, because he's an Army officer and he's a businessman. And when you listen to him, I mean, I don't think he's ever done anything goofy in his life. They're not going to find the Graham Plattner stuff. You know, right. Once you're an officer, you're pretty much on the ticket, you know, on being a good human.
Thanks, Milt. I appreciate it. I think that question of which issue resonates more, and really the way you're seeing it, I think the way we're going to hear it from callers is, if you're a Republican, you care about fraud. If you're a Democrat, you care about immigration. But the Star Tribune had a story this morning that was quoting Democrat legislators knocking on the door. And guess what? Democrats in Democratic districts are saying, you know, I am worried about the fraud. So for me, when I look at the Michelle Tafoya race, the Senate race, fraud is not my number one concern for a U.S. senator. It just is not something that is that important to me. For a governor, it is. For a governor, it's a huge issue. For a state legislator, absolutely. For a U.S. senator, for me, I don't know. But am I parsing this too much where the regular voter isn't? I don't know.
Well, it's interesting, too, when you look at that, because I think you're right in the sense that, you know, there's less that the federal government can do for some of these issues that maybe somebody like Michelle Tafoya is focusing on. And yet you're speaking to Minnesota voters, right? So if Minnesota voters care more about fraud than they do about immigration, are you doing your job as a Senate candidate speaking to the issues that they care about? Or are you doing your job to say, well, actually, these are the issues I can actually do something about? I don't know. That's kind of a difficult hair to split, isn't it?
What I was picking up from our last caller, and like, look, if you break down the logic of this to say that I trust Michelle Tafoya when it comes to fraud, I mean, Michelle Tafoya, what gives you a reason to trust her on that other than she's an outsider?
Well, she doesn't have a political track record, which is both a good and a bad thing.
Yeah, that's
right?
Why I'm just saying I don't know that I would affirmatively trust her.
There's no baggage there, but there's also no record there. Yeah, so you just you don't
what
know.
What fraud have you rooted out before? I don't know. Like, to me, not that I'm saying I'm not going to vote for Michelle Tafoya. I'm just saying, like, that is not, like, I don't look at that. I do think that it'll be interesting if Minnesota voters kind of go down the throw all the bums out approach, which sometimes you see in a midterm, and especially considering what's happened in this state, I could see people on the left and on the right. On the left, you're saying, look, what did we do to stop the Trump administration from coming here and terrorizing the city of Minneapolis? For the right, you say, we've had all of this fraud and nobody lost their job.
You're right. I mean, there's certainly
third party, man. You'd have a window, wouldn't you?
Or, I mean, it just throws everything into chaos, right? Yeah. Because, you know, you can make arguments for both sides. And if it does just become a throw the bums out thing, you don't know how this is going to shake out.
Texter saying, Jason, fraud is bad, but money can be replaced. How are you going to replace Renee Good and Alex Pretty? Immigration, and federal government overreach is the big issue for that texter. Another texter says, Jason, I'm in your camp. I'm way more concerned about fraud. I also believe the wind is out of the sails about immigration issues here. I would say I don't think the wind is out of the sail of those. I think especially, and you're going to see this in the Angie Craig, Peggy Flanagan race, that immigration is going to be the number one issue. Will that last through November? Will that affect a general voter? I don't know. At this point, honestly, I'm just voting for the candidate that's closest to the political center and not a whack job, says Texter. Tell me who those candidates are. I'd appreciate knowing. Continental Diamond Time is 3:59. ABC and Laura News coming up.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm just fascinated by how Dan Cook lives his life. So many aspects to this that I have questions about, and maybe you can help us as well. Welcome to Drive Time. It is Thursday, July 9th. So,
yeah,
Dan did something today that I just found out about, and it is inconceivable to me that this would be a smart choice. Tell everybody what you did.
So I turned off my air conditioner before I left the apartment today because the dew point is finally dropping down to levels that don't feel like the Burmese jungle out there. So I wanted to get at least one day because, again, I want a wall unit in my apartment.
Right.
And so my electric bill is probably going to nearly triple this month.
Sure.
Just from running that thing for the last almost
What's
2 weeks
bill?
Straight.
What's the bill? Like actual
on an
bill?
Actual on a regular month, you know, say in the dead of winter, yep, or I'm not running it at all, it's like maybe $45.
Okay.
And it'll be well over 100 by the time I'm done at the end of July, yeah. I'm sure.
So today you thought,
because the humidity was finally dropped. The temps really honestly haven't been scorching the last week or so, but the humidity's been so dang high that it just, you know, I would just sit in the apartment and sweat. So I've been running the air conditioner, but I thought today, with the dew point finally dropping, I can at least give it a day off. So I shut it off before I left. So we'll see what kind of condition my apartment's in when I get home.
So for you, yeah, it's a dew point scenario? That
well, no,
is
it's
what?
A combination. You know, if it gets in...
Is there
it,
a metric for this? Is there like a Cook-O-Meter? Like some sort of...
I don't know that I have specific numbers. Maybe we could. Maybe
somebody
we could do
like
that.
Claude this and I, figure out
if it's over 85 degrees.
Yeah, because right now it's 83.
Right, which
that's,
so it's
that's
not
AC
so it's under,
weather. I
that's
would say
under no, not 83.
83
no.
is no air
no.
conditioning.
No, I can get away with fans at 83. Are you kidding me? So long as the dew point is where it's at, which I think is like 61 right now. That's pushing it too much more than that, and no, I'd have to
set. I'm all thrown off by
I love and I love that.
I just can't imagine that, like, what I need to do to decide if I'm going to shut off the AC is like a dew point.
Well, you
humidity.
Don't. You now, don't need to do that. I need to do that.
But do you do like so? Are we still using humidity? I feel like everyone, like now, the weather nerds. You're sort of a weather nerd. You were going to be a meteorologist.
Yes, that was one path of study I explored in college.
You know what I wish I studied in college?
Anything?
Wow. You know what? I was in the honors program. Okay. I used to be smart before I decided
now look what happened
to do this. So dew point or relative humidity? I feel like they don't care about humidity anymore.
Yeah, I don't know that humidity is such a big deal.
Now it's out.
Yeah, it's more dew point. You know, where does that get uncomfortable? And then it's obviously heat index, which is using the dew point along with the temperature to make up a number.
Do you guys run your AC? I mean, Dan is in an unusual.
Yeah, because I don't have central. If I had central air, that's a whole different thing, right? But because I just
set it and forget it.
I have the wall unit, and I've got a couple of fans to move the air around from the living room where the wall unit is into my bedroom. That's how I do it.
Joe is with you on YouTube.
Thank you, Joe.
Most weather pages say if the dew point is over 65, people feel uncomfortable. Another texter is pointing out the heat index. Somebody else says when the dew point is above 50 or above 60, it feels clammy and gross. It doesn't matter what the temperature is. I'm not that sophisticated. Surprising no one. I just...
Look at the privileged life you lead, DeRussia. You don't have to worry about silly little things like electric bills and dew points. And
it's true. You may have remembered last week the mayor of New York City, Zohran Mamdani, made some headlines when he urged New Yorkers to set their thermostat to 78 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty steamy.
Yeah, no, that's...
And so, of course, the responses were here. This is what
communist mayor
socialism is, people. 78
degree temperatures, buildings falling down. What else is he doing?
I tell you, if the mayor of New York City is saying 78 degrees, if that is evidence of socialism, Gary DeRussia, my father, was apparently like the king of the socialists.
So Lenin, and then Jason's dad.
Right in there. He was just a cheap, cheap man is what he was. It is. He's alive and well. Just yeah. I made it sound like he's not with us. Gene is in Maplewood. Gene, are you running this sort of calculus yourself?
All I know is, your producer is awesome. Now, okay, today...
No, you can just stop right there.
A lot of people
are saying... Yeah, I mean, we just put a period at the end of that sentence. I don't know why you need to continue.
Well, because this morning I turned off my AC. I hate AC. But when it's muggy and stuff, and I just checked... It's 56 dew point and 40% humidity. It's nice outside. Enjoy the day, guys, because the rest of the week, it's going to be so humid. I mean, it was so humid sometimes. I would go outside and...
How humid is it, Gene?
You guys, I love you. But the thing is, you got to enjoy the outside when you can.
Yeah, it's true.
You know? You know, and I have a plant out sitting out by my front door, and thank goodness the rain has kept it wet, but not anymore. Right. So now I'll be watering it.
Very good, Gene. Do you set a thermostat? Is there when you have the AC, what do you set it at?
You know what? When it's on, I've never put it to 78. For goodness sakes, I had it at 75 sometimes, but usually it's 74. Sometimes down to 72, but then it gets really cold, and then I put a sweater on, and then I go, well, this is stupid.
Thanks,
but anyway,
Gene. Thank you. We appreciate you. Gene's the best. 651-461.
I mean, if you're going to set it at 78, you might as well not have it on at all.
Well, when it's 100 outside, though, 78 is significantly nicer, right? It was 100 in New York City when the mayor...
Yeah.
The big evil socialist one. That I mean,
trying to stop those blackouts, you know.
You know what they do in our neighborhood? They turn off your air conditioner, like because I'm signed up for the
power saving thing. Yeah.
Do you ever think like XL Energy? There's like a guy. There's a guy just sitting over there. He's like, DeRussia, turn off the
watch.
Turn
this.
It off. Just. It might be, I got a friend, Tom Young, who works at XL Energy. He's a computer nerd over there. Maybe Tom Young is. Tom and Heather came with us to Portugal on one of the Colette trips. Maybe Tom is shutting off my central air. I don't know. Texter says that Fox News had an 11 box of people to talk about Mom Dami and the turn off.
Not
AC
a surprise.
State. Do you remember on TV, like when they would have a 3-box? That was sort of a big deal. It was like, that's amazing. Now 11. Let's go to Brian in Northeast Minneapolis. Brian, are you a dew point calculator?
Dew point. Chris Schaefer doesn't tell me the dew point, so I can figure out, you don't have to tell me humidity. And I live on the bottom floor, so I haven't used air conditioning yet. Mm. And I don't need to because... I'm
that
okay.
Helps.
But dew point.
What is your number? What's your dew point number where you say, like, this is a dilly of a dew point for me? I'm fine.
Anything above 60, some people start to get uncomfortable. I go by the basics. Anything under 60, pretty much everyone's comfortable. So. Hmm.
No. All right. This is all very eye-opening to me, Brian. Thank you.
I want more dew points during
more
weather
dew points.
Cast.
I can provide that information. I mean, we should have Dan do it. We could get it sponsored. It's Dan's DuPont.
Meteorological guy.
Yeah. Schaefer is letting you down, that's for sure.
Always. DuPont. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, Chris Schaefer is like the third nicest human being on the planet.
Huh? Makes it more fun to make fun of him, doesn't it?
Kind of. Especially when he does the puns. Then it's, forget it. Go for it. Have at him.
So many puns. Texters say, I love the heat. Today is really nice, but humidity is trying to kill me. Wow.
Okay. Humidity is tough because you can't sweat, right? I mean, you can, but it doesn't evaporate and do the job.
Yeah. If it would be 90 and not humid, it would be okay. I had chemo years ago, and ever since, humidity makes me physically ill. I am fascinated with sort of the trade-offs that life gives you, you know? Sometimes you're like, I survived cancer. But to survive, you have to have this chemotherapy. Here's the whole, like, this is painful. But then what you get as a benefit is now you have the most sensitive dew point detector known to man. It's very strange. Another texter says, it's like your sleep number. I'm now excited to find out what my dew point comfort level is. I think this could be, like, this could be a Dan Cook, the Dan Cook dew point.
It works for me.
What is the relationship between dew point and humidity? It always confused me a little bit.
It's a percentage of the air temperature, right? The closer the dew point is to the air temperature, the higher that humidity percentage is.
So, I mean, that sort of makes it seem like it's the same. Humidity indicates the moisture in the air relative to the temperature. Dew point is an absolute temperature.
Right.
That tells you
the temperature with that moisture condenses out of the air.
Correct.
So the closer the dew point is to the air temperature, the higher that humidity percentage is. Yeah. That's what I just said.
My head is already exploding. Like, I don't know. I don't get it. I just turn on the AC.
If we had a whiteboard, I could do what we do over in the corner. I'll pull the whiteboard out. I'll do it for you during the break.
A texter says that Jason has a sponsor endorsement for electricity, and he pays no bills. So maybe that's why I don't care.
See, I think so.
Maybe that's why I don't care. Why don't you hit the button at 418? Hit the thing.
Do we want to go to break? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. Don't I have a Randy's Electric?
I mean, you will.
Right now?
You will. But this is the weirdest way you've ever gone to break. So I'm
right because the guy was like, "You got a sponsor, sponsor."
When things are going on in your mind, I'm not party to that. So I don't. I'm sure that made perfect sense to you with the way that you were laying that out in your own brain. But I don't know what's going on in there.
What the texter
said.
There's
like neurons firing. I don't know.
A sponsor endorsement for electricity, and then I thought you could hit the thing. We're about 10 minutes away from talking about some of the new foods at the State Fair. Crazy list out today. The studio smells like this dill pickle pie. If you love dill pickle, and I do love dill pickle, but you know what I like? I like a pickle. And I like a fried pickle. That's about the extent of what I need the pickle people to be providing, you know? We're going to talk to the dumpling people. Saturday Dumpling Co., which has been a huge viral hit in Minneapolis for the last couple of years now at the State Fair. That's coming up in about 10 minutes. I want to talk right now about the city of St. Paul doing what I think a lot of us have been waiting for the cities of Minneapolis to just do for 3 or 4 years. And the new mayor of St. Paul announced yesterday that the city is going to start clearing all of the homeless encampments. The compassionate approach, the let people come to their own conclusion that they either need somewhere to stay in a homeless shelter, or that they're going to change their life in some way and get drug treatment or get mental health treatment. That compassionate way has not worked. It hasn't worked. And you can argue that part of why it didn't work is that we didn't have an aggressive enough approach in pushing people into choosing to help themselves. I think that is a fair criticism, and also it's time. To me, it's time. When I heard that the city of St. Paul is going to clear their largest homeless encampment, my initial reaction was that, thank God, and why did it take so long? Love your feedback at 651-461-9226. I think the fact that they announced this so early, and they're starting with the large camp at Pig's Eye Park along the Mississippi River, the reason they announced it early is to say, like, all right, there's about 100 people, more than 100 people at this encampment, And they've been trying for years to get those folks to get out of there. And they haven't. And so now they know it's time. Now, the challenge in this community, as Jonathan points out, is that if you clear a homeless shelter or a homeless encampment in St. Paul, are those people just going to come right across the river to Minneapolis? And the answer is yes, especially if the city of Minneapolis continues to hand-wring about what to do about this situation. Now, I realize that none of the options here are good. They really aren't. And the people who just are like, well, arrest everybody, like, get a clue. Like, you're not going to keep people locked up for any significant amount of time. But you also cannot allow people to just live on the streets in these large encampments. You just, it's not humane for those folks. It's not safe. It's not safe for the community. It's not safe for law enforcement, firefighters. There have been all sorts of criminal activities at these different homeless encampments. And this is like east of downtown, but there have been fires, sexual assault, theft, two overdose deaths, and other emergencies, according to an assessment the city performed earlier this year. Now, I don't know what the timing on that has been, but would you consider that a humane way of treating people? I don't think the way we have done this has been any sort of victory for empathy and humanity. And I'll tell you the other challenge in St. Paul, and some of this is aware, it's in my face every day, because I live downtown, and every time I leave downtown Minneapolis to get on Interstate 94, I go past the Dorothy Day Center and Catholic Charities, and it is at once incredibly sad and eye-opening, and at the same time, it is infuriating that the front door of our capital city is often people screaming at each other, people in one state of overdose or another, people in one state of undress or another. I've seen more from strangers than I would care to see. And this is outside a shelter. So you still have these challenges regardless. But I think this first step in announcing in the city of St. Paul, like, look, this, we're going to close this one down and we're going to close them all down. It starts with this one, says the mayor. And the mayor in a statement said, no matter how we address this issue, there will be disruption. This is one of the most significant challenges facing communities across our country. And I think it is. Urban communities are all in the same boat. This is not unique to us. But I would like to hear more conversation about what the plan is. Like, I do think the cities sort of face an uneven burden on this, where everybody who is living in a homeless encampment isn't necessarily from the city of Minneapolis. This is a Ramsey County, Hennepin County. Frankly, it's a state of Minnesota challenge. And is there enough being put forth to make sure we have enough beds for folks? I don't think so. But the other issue is that there is a certain segment of people that just, regardless of the beds, they don't want it. They don't want to stop doing drugs. They don't want to stop having sex. They don't want the religious overtones, whatever. They don't want it. They don't want the rules. And we don't get to decide that. We don't get to decide that. I hope Minneapolis does the same thing, because I do not want St. Paul just pushing people into Minneapolis. That solves nothing. Let's break. It is State Fair Food Day. It's been a big talker in our news throughout the day today, and a big talker on social media as well. I have been making lists, sharing my favorite new foods that have been announced, and then maybe some that give me pause. All of that on Instagram at DeRushaJ. But next, Peter from Saturday Dumpling Company. It's Co. Saturday Dumpling Co. Peter Biot joins us talking about being a new vendor and the new food he's got at the fair in a minute. To Russia Eats, brought to you by the Minnesota Pork Board, and you can't have missed it today. The new foods all announced for the Minnesota State Fair. There's an official list. There are new foods not on the list. There are new vendors. It's a little overwhelming, but we have one of the new vendors with us at CCO here to talk about the first time that they'll have their own booth at the fair. Saturday Dumpling Co. Peter Bien is with us, the co-founder. Peter, congratulations on getting in the fair.
Thank you, thank you. Nice to be here.
How's it feel being a part of like such a massive tradition here in Minnesota?
It's great. You know, we'll see what the madness brings. 12 days. Usually we go one, maybe two at the most every single year, and now we're going to be there all 12 days. So we'll see. It's going to be herding cats, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Saturday Dumpling Co. started in the COVID era and became huge online, people picking up the drops of yep. those dumplings. And now today you have how many brick-and-mortar locations?
We've got two brick-and-mortar locations, one in South Minneapolis on 54th and Penn, our newest location, that one is. We have the one in Northeast, our first brick-and-mortar on Central Avenue and Hennepin in Northeast. And we have a food stall in Malcolm Yards on campus.
So you guys are going to be in the food building at the state fair.
Going to be in the food building.
You have a little state fair experience with a product that you made with O'Gara's, right?
We did, yes. So last year we made O'Gara's new fair food item. It was called a pot of gold. It was a dumpling popper, a completely new item. That we did in collaboration with them. It was filled with cheesy mashed potatoes. And we have a meat rendition of that at our stall this year.
Ah, so the experience, do you think the experience of going through that with O'Gara's before, obviously different from having your own stand and having to staff it, but do you think that prepared you at all for this?
Production-wise, yeah.
Yeah.
Execution-wise, we'll see this year. Last year we were joking and we were saying, you know, me and my wife Linda, we were like, you know, this is the best way to approach the fair. We just make them. They do what they're good at. We do what we're good at. And then the fair called, you know, maybe 2-3 months ago. And, you know, you have to say yes to the fair. So here we are.
If you say no once, that phone never rings again, right?
That's what I've heard. I don't know, but I don't know how many people say no.
Right. Right. Why did you say yes? So they reached out to you. Boy, is that going to tick off people who've been scratching and trying desperately to get into the fair.
Well, you know, we had our application in 3 years ago, you know, follow up every year and just see what's available. And then I think O'Gara's really showed them something that we were able to not only produce en masse and have consistency and keep the lines flowing and also produce a product that was consistent.
I thought it was good. I know it was sort of controversial last year, but I liked it.
Yeah.
I think some people thought it was like too dense.
Like too dense or too mushy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of learnings there on the production side. It was like a new item. So I think this year's going to be a lot better. And, you know, I think it was like the perfect space. The food building closes an hour earlier, opens an hour later. So good way to ease into the food scene at the fair.
Peter runs Saturday Dumpling Co. with his wife, Linda. You brought some of the new products. Obviously, everything's new for you this year, but you make dumplings all the time. So this is not like, oh, gosh, like, how are we going to do this?
Yeah, it's not crazy. Production we've kind of handled.
What are the products you said? One is based sort of on that dumpling popper you did last year.
So that is our meat-filled item. It is a cheesy Chinese sausage dumpling popper. So it's filled with a sweet and savory La Chong Chinese sausage, provolone, and it's deep fried.
Mm-hmm.
A little crispy on the outside,
You
know, nice and cheesy on the inside. And we're serving that with just a simple sweet and sour dipping sauce.
Easy, delicious. You'll be able to crank these out. It's shareable.
That's what we're hoping. Yeah.
Those are some of the factors you think of. Having something shareable, I think, is key myself when I'm out at the fair.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You're coming in big groups. You're trying to eat as much as possible, you know. So having something that's bite-sized, finger food is always beneficial in our minds.
What's this next
this wonton is wonton wrapper.
Yeah, this is our sweet offering. It is a deep-fried ube cheesecake wonton. It's topped with sweetened condensed milk and Biscoff cookie crumbles. And inside is a ube cheesecake cream cheese filling.
Some people are going to say, what is ube?
Yeah, exactly.
It's purple.
I mean, it's purple. It's taro. You know, some people call it taro. Some people call it ube. It's
sort of sweet potato adjacent, I guess.
Yeah, potato, sweet potato. It's a tuber, so it mm-hmm. takes on like a lot of like the flavors that you put with it.
Right.
So, you know, we have a little nutmeg in there. We have a little sugar, just to sweeten it up a little bit more.
Yeah.
And some vanilla as well.
That is very good. The consistency. My mouth is watering, so it's hard to talk. The consistency, it's so sweet.
Yeah.
But, like, the ube sort of brings in a little earthiness to it, so it's not a sugar bomb.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bright purple. Like, people are going to go nuts with that.
I hope so. Yeah, ube is one of those ingredients right now that's kind of...
it is hot.
Hot and trendy right now. So
I saw a couple...
We're trying to ride the wave.
There are a couple ube items on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is fun. It's visually enjoyable, I think. And like you said, it's a good base for
dumpling. I hope
flavors.
So. Yeah. That's what we're counting on.
Peter Bien, Saturday Dumpling Company. You're in the food building. You're going to have to hire people to come out there and work, right?
Absolutely. If you hop on to SaturdayDumpling.com, on the top banner, you'll see careers. And we welcome any and all people to come and apply.
Did you grow up here in Minnesota?
I did. Went to high school in Moundsview High School, up in Shoreview in Arden Hills.
And so when you think about that, like, family story, growing up here in Minnesota, having your chance to have your food at the state fair.
I mean, it's pretty cool to think about, you know, coming full circle, being at the fair every single year, seeing, you know, some of the restaurant tours that we look up to, both in, like, the fine dining area and people like Stephanie Schimp, as well as, you know, our friends over at Baba's.
Yeah.
Seeing them do the fair.
Did you ask for advice from any of these guys if you should do it or not?
I certainly will be, you know, now that the news is out. So, you know, we'll take whatever help that we can get. And then seeing, you know, longstanding people like Chris O'Gara, you know, and Danny O'Gara over there, you know, and we're close too. So it's nice having people that we can lean on.
It's going to be a wild ride for sure, and you still are keeping your regular operations open,
all
too.
All three locations are going to be cranking out dumplings.
Where is the production kitchen? Where are you doing
the production kitchen is in our first location,
so
still
in Northeast. Is it cramped in there?
It is very cramped, right. Yes. We have off-site storage now, but all the production is still, you know, for like 90% of it is still handmade, hand-cranked out. Each dumpling still touches the, you know, each hand of our production crew.
So. I mean, the advantage of this type of food is that you can stockpile this stuff for the fair, and then you're frying it on site, right?
If we had to make these a la minute or day of, I mean,
forget it.
With the temperatures and
execution,
like that.
Though, you never know, and it gets hot in that food building.
Hey,
that's for sure.
I'm sure we're gonna get thrown a couple of crazy curveballs.
Oh yeah,
so,
you never
looking
know.
Forward to it.
It's fun, man. I'm really happy for you. Congratulations. You have a beverage too. That's gonna be a part of it.
We do. Yeah. I mean, both to cool us down and cool the fairgoers down. It is a salted mango yuzuade. So, you know, a little salty, a little sweet. It'll be on ice. And we love it. I think this one's going to be a sleeper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. The mango on a hot day, holy moly.
Yeah,
that's going to
go
like nuts. Yeah. The beverages, I do think like the non-alcoholic, more creative beverages you're seeing, it's pretty cool. Makes it fun for people.
Yeah, I think the industry as a whole is kind of trending that direction. So, you know, leaning into it with fun flavors like yuzu and mango, I don't think you can go wrong.
Peter, really fun to have you here. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Lots of food coverage at WCCORadio.com. We have the full list of new state fair foods there for you. Also, I have created a list at MinnesotaMonthly.com. the ridiculous ranking of these new foods without me trying them. Here's just a ranking. Also videos on social media of my top 10 and the six that made me a little mad. The six I'm a little disturbed with. Which do you think is getting better traffic online, Peter?
Oh, I'm sure it's a lot.
Yeah, the Haterade. Like,
I'm sure it's the latter.
Yeah, of course. No doubt about it. Thanks, Peter. DeRussia Eats here on CCO. Thanks to the Minnesota Pork Board. Back in just a minute.
So I have to tell you, being a food critic on the day that the new food lists come out for the state fair, it's days like this that I wish like I had like an intern or a helper or something. Because I got a heads up 2 days ago that the state fair was going to release this today. But it's all very secret and they don't give you a heads up. They just publish it at 6:20 or in the morning. And so it's a race, right? The internet world, you want to be first or you want to have a unique perspective or whatever. So I got up at like 6:45 because I don't cut and paste the list and just put it on my put my name under it and write one paragraph and call it a day. I do something far more stupid. I write this long list where I have ranked the new foods at the fair. And then I write some little snarky or loving or whatever remark about it. And that's at minnesotamonthly.com. You'll be able to see it. But that took me about 2 hours, Dan, to write that today. And do you guys ever have that moment when you write something where then you hit publish or you hit save or you hit send or you hit whatever and you hold your breath because the computer system that Minnesota Monthly uses, one would think it's from the same people that bring us the Odyssey computer systems. So I hit send on it and just pray. You're like, I hope this doesn't just boot me out and I have to start over. Now, I had a backup. But, you know, you put all these photos in here and the list and on and on and on. And then all day you have everybody reaching out who's ticked off that, like, I put them at the bottom of the list. So, like, I have a video, which, like, on this show, I don't mind irritating you guys a little bit. Like, these are small businesses. You sort of hate to be like, well, this sounds like crap, you know? But, like, my loyalty is to the people, is to the people. And if I think something sounds like crap, I'm going to tell you. Also, the whole enterprise is fraudulent, right? Because I don't know if these things are good or not. I haven't tried them. It's kind of fun. Fun day. Fun stuff. Get you thinking about the fair for sure. Chris Saliza is going to join us at the top of the hour, our political expert, political analyst. And we're talking about Graham Plattner. Some comparisons to Jesse Ventura and Michelle Tafoya. Interesting conversation with Saliza coming up. Continental Diamond Time Check. It is 4:57. Time to get that pre-owned luxury timepiece you've been dreaming of.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Here in Minnesota, we have been fascinated by the story of Graham Plattner because we love an outsider like anyone else. We have a track record of success in this state with Jesse Ventura, a man with a very colorful history becoming governor of Minnesota. But the implosion of Plattner, and then we'll see what the fallout is for people like Governor Tim Walz and outgoing U.S. Senator Tina Smith, who expended some political capital to endorse this guy, even knowing all the red flags. It is something being talked about here and around the country, and Chris Saliza has been talking about this on his Substack called So What. Chris, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you, and I can tell you that I remember the exact moment when Jesse Ventura won in 1998.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I remember exactly where I was because I as a child of Connecticut, which is where at the time the World Wrestling Federation was based, I was a gigantic wrestling fan in the 1980s. And, you know, Jesse the Body Ventura was, you know, he was there. He didn't even wrestle all that much. He was a talker. But I remember being like, wait, what? Man, that I remember Jake Tapper wrote an entire book in like 3 weeks about Ventura winning. And I still find that to be, talk about an omen of things to come in terms of what people wanted or were willing to overlook. Or, I mean, it's just what a fascinating moment in time. In some ways, it kind of shepherded in the era we're in now.
Yeah, I mean, you could certainly look at Donald Trump and say he is Jesse Ventura on, like, steroids in a way.
100%. 100%. I always tell people the best, if you want to understand Donald Trump, you need to understand professional wrestling. Because he comes from that kind of world, right? He and Vince McMahon are close friends. He was part of, like, storylines on pro wrestling. It's a very useful window. Anyway, Plattner. But I do, I know we're a Minnesota.
It's interesting, right?
Audience.
We think about that. And so when I saw Graham Plattner arrive on the scene, just like we saw in Los Angeles, right, with the mayoral candidate that captured everyone's attention, the outsider of the reality.
Spencer Pratt.
Spencer Pratt. Like, there's a little bit where I think we all look at these folks and think, you know, it would be nice to have, like, a non-political insider come in there and be like the voice of the people. So where did Graham?
Oh, totally.
Where did this go so south with Graham Plattner?
Yeah, and you know, it's not new either. You know, obviously there's the Ventura and Trump, and you know, look, how about if John Fetterman was 5'11" and dressed in suits, would he be John Fetterman? Probably not, right? I mean, I think part of John Fetterman's appeal in Pennsylvania was, hey, this guy wears Carhartt sweatshirts and shorts every day, and he's 6'8". I think there are two kind of paradoxical things going on with Plattner, and there will be more like Plattner. I don't know if they'll follow the same arc, but on the one hand, to your point, Jason, there really is this desire. It's not just within the Democratic Party. I think it's within the Republican Party, too. It's why we got Donald Trump, for people who are not part of the establishment, people who are not the buttoned up Brooks Brothers shirt, red tie, brown, a charcoal gray suit, right? Like, I think people want that. They feel like our politicians, Republican or Democrat, have kind of failed us, that politics doesn't reflect the things I, regular person, care about. The other thing that is true and also paradoxical is most of those people who are outsiders, who have not run for anything, have never been vetted in any meaningful way. Like, they have done things that make them outsidery, but also may make them unelectable. I mean, that's the hard thing with Graham Plattner. It's like, yeah, he's got tattoos, and he's an oyster farmer, and he served in the military, and he got disgruntled. Yeah, he wrote a few things, but then it's like, oh, and then he treated these women like that. And then this woman this week, you know, alleged that he raped her. And, you know, that's the thing. It's, you don't get one without the other. It's like how I think about the internet. Oh, the internet in many ways is amazing. It's also terrible. So, you know, I mean, it's like, you don't get an outsider with a perfectly vetted establishment candidate's credentials. And I guess it's sort of a balancing act. And I guess Plattner this week, kind of the tipping point was reached.
And the question is, what are we willing to accept, right?
Yes.
I think obnoxious or offensive writing on Reddit when you're in your 20s, I guess I would tell America, like, brace yourself, because that is...
Well, there's going to be a lot of that.
Yeah, that's what we're going to be getting. But when it comes to abusive behavior towards women, I think a lot of Democrats say, well, everybody put up with that with Trump. What's different here?
Yeah, and my answer to that is the thing I told my kids when they were little. Two wrongs don't make a right. You know, like, I'm not trying to excuse. Like, Donald Trump has been credibly accused by more than a dozen women of a variety of sexual misconduct, from sexual harassment to sort of, you know, lewd sexual comments. We know he made lewd sexual comments. We heard about it on the Access Hollywood tapes. I'm not forgiving any of that. But that doesn't mean that you get carte blanche if you're another politician to just behave in that way, right? It's, if Donald Trump's behavior is wrong, and Graham Plattner's behavior is wrong. Now, did enough voters either excuse Trump's behavior, think that the allegations weren't true, or prioritize other things? Yes. Now, would I have done that? No, I would not have. But that's how democracy works, right? I mean, Graham Plattner could have said, you know what, I won the primary. I'm staying in the race. He didn't have to drop out. Do I think he would have won? Probably not. Am I sure he wouldn't have won? No, because I never say never anymore. I always say, when people say, surely fill-in-the-blank thing couldn't happen in politics, I always say, who's the current president of the United States? Right. Oh, it's Donald Trump? Oh, and he's in his second term? So don't ever say it never.
Is there a lesson here for kind of many of us who are seeking those different voices? In Minnesota, we have Michelle Tafoya, who is like, yep. We'll see if she wins the Republican primary. She didn't win the endorsement from the state party, but I would think she's the favorite to win the Republican primary for U.S. Senate. Now, she's been in the public eye. It's a little different, right? Like, she's been in the public eye for her life. You feel like there's a little bit of vetting that comes with that, even if you're not a traditional candidate.
Yeah, I think that's right as it relates to Tafoya. You never know what you don't know, but right. But she is not as much of an unknown as Graham Plattner. I mean, was when he started running, at least. The advice I'd always give is, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. I don't want to sound too cynical, but I do think, especially on the Democratic side, there is this, it's true on Republican side too, but I think to a slightly lesser extent, there's this desire to find these political saviors, you know, these people who are, they're going to ride to the rescue of our broken political system. And you know what? All of us have feet made of clay. You know, I mean, that's the thing. We are all human. We have all done things, written things, said things that are warts. Now, some are warts that can be forgiven by a majority of the public, and some aren't. And there is a little bit of a sliding scale there. But I would caution people, no, we know this in our private lives. No one is perfect, right? If it looks too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. But with some of these politicians, I think we freight them with these expectations of, like, Graham Plattner is the one who's come to save American politics. It's like, probably not. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Not to sound too cynical, right. But I was trust but verify.
And character does matter, which is sort of interesting, because it's easy to get, like, really dark and cynical about this stuff and say, I don't know that character does matter. But when push comes to shove and you have an opportunity to intervene, I do think for most voters, character is an issue here in America.
I think that's right. And I do, you know, one of the things, Jason, I think that we're grappling with, and I think we continue to grapple with and look for data points is, does character matter anymore in a post-Trump era? Because even after Donald Trump isn't president anymore, if you think the impact he has left on American policy is just going to dissipate, you're fooling yourself, right? And he has been able to overcome character issues, whether it's three marriages, whether it's comments about women, whether it's allegations from women about his behavior, that would have doomed lots of other politicians.
Yeah.
You know, I remind people, Gary Hart had to get out of the 1988 presidential campaign because they found out that he was cheating on his wife. I mean, is that disqualifying now? I don't know. So I think this is a data point that says, you know what, like, there are, to the point you made earlier, there are lines that, if they are crossed, for the majority of the public, that is disqualifying. Now, we'll see. I think we have to be hesitant. Don't draw too many conclusions off of Graham Plattner. Unfortunately, there's going to be more situations like this in the years going forward, and then let's see kind of how people react from there. But I actually think this last week suggests character does matter to enough voters.
I think that's right. Chris Saliza, thank you so much. Appreciate the time. People can follow Chris on his Substack, chrissaliza.substack.com. Great stuff. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, my friend. Be well.
Drive Time back in just a minute here on CCO.
Is Mitch McConnell alive? And do we as voters, as taxpayers, as Americans have a greater right to know what's going on with the medical situation of our elected officials than we would of our neighbor? I think we do. And I think if we've learned anything over the last couple of years, it's that we cannot trust our elected officials to tell us the truth about their medical situation. And so what do we do about it? What do we do about it? The fact that the question is being asked today, is Mitch McConnell alive? And in fact, it's a question that a Republican congressman asked about today. McConnell is, of course, the former Senate Republican leader. He is a senator from Kentucky. an Indiana House representative, was on News Nation today criticizing the lack of information coming from McConnell's office, saying, look, Republicans deserve more information. All of us deserve more information. What frosts me the most about politicians lying or concealing their medical situation is that it's about power. It's just about preserving their power. And in some cases, it's staff members, I think. It's sort of like Weekend at Bernie's, right? Somebody's propping these guys up. And of course, the worst case we saw of this was during the Biden administration. I think it's fair to say, you know, we don't know how wide the circle was of people who knew that it was more than he was just getting older. It was more than he's just a little tired. And there are certainly moments with President Trump, like we saw yesterday, where he starts going and you're like, did you just call
the Islamic Republic of Japan?
He referred to Volodymyr Zelensky as President Putin a couple times. You know, I think we have to have some empathy for people who are getting older. I would say, like, once again, my anti-old people in political office, my viewpoint on this looks more and more right as time goes on. I know Chad likes to say I'm an ageist. I like to say that we have standards for how old you can be to fly an airplane. We have age limitations on the bottom end of our Constitution, right?
We have mandatory retirement ages for judges in Minnesota.
And I think we should have that for elected officials at the federal level.
You know, on the one hand, to me, it feels kind of gross to say we got to know exactly what's going on with somebody who's in the hospital dealing with whatever kind of
and we know he was admitted
serious
on
illness that he's dealing with.
June 14th.
Right.
And it feels like you should be able to have some agency over what you share.
Some privacy, you know, when you're dealing with serious health issues like that. I feel that way. But also, when there's not transparency, when you're not releasing out, this is what the medical condition is, this is what's going on, then you get the conspiracy theories propping up. Oh, he's actually dead, but they've got to pretend that he's alive until this particular date on the calendar, because then the governor can't just replace him. The whole thing is just gross. So do we just have to say 82, whatever? I mean, pick an age and just say, that's it. You're mandatory retirement after that. And if you're going to miss more than a week of time, either in the Senate or in the House, you've got to put out some sort of statement about what your medical condition is.
Yeah, I mean, when you feel like you have more transparency in professional sports about injuries and time out of the job compared to what we have in the U.S. Congress, I think that's a problem. And I'm sorry. Yes, you as a regular citizen have 100% rights provided by the law to protect you from having to reveal information about your medical history. You do not have to run for Congress. It is not mandatory. And to me, you should have to give up some of that privacy. And maybe we didn't have to get to this point if these men and women weren't so damn power hungry that they can't just retire. They can't just step down. Mitch McConnell, what, twice? Like, had, like,
serious medical episodes. Yeah.
Like, on camera.
On camera, yes.
But he couldn't give it up, could he? And is it he couldn't give it up? Is it his wife wouldn't let him give it up?
Dianne Feinstein on the Democratic side, same kind of situation.
This knows no party. It knows no party. This thirst for power. And I do think staff has something to do with it, too, because if you're the chief of staff or some big shot in the office, you're worried that you're going to lose your gig. But it's just another reason, I think, why Americans look at politicians and say they're out for themselves and they're not out for us. And it's hard to argue it when you see this time and time again. I wish we were not at a point where I would be seriously considering, do we need to change the law to require this?
But we're there.
But we're there.
It's just the reality.
I think we're there. I do think you have to give up your right to privacy in this regard.
At least to an extent.
And if you don't want to give up the right to privacy, don't run for office. Yes. That's my view. You're welcome to weigh in. As always, you can email us on the show, jason@odyssey.com. Signing up for our podcast is always invited. Drive Time with DeRussia. We upload every segment of this show. And we have a separate podcast just for chefs and restaurateurs and farmers called DeRussia Eats. Just dropped a new episode from John Krause, the owner and baker at Patisserie 46, celebrating 16 years in Bastille Day. They're celebrating this weekend at Patisserie 46, so check that podcast out as well. We're going to break in a minute a shocking story affecting a Minnesota journalist. This guy was tracked by these flock cameras. You know, these cameras that are all over Minnesota, all over America, that are reading license plates. Our guest coming up was tracked by these cameras, such to the point that he was surrounded by the cops. He did nothing wrong. A cautionary tale about all the surveillance that we have around us, coming up in just a minute. 5:30 here on Drive Time. This story scares the crap out of me. We have turned much of our world into a surveillance society. And if you're like me, you think, you know what? If we can use cameras to try to find car thieves and murderers and gangbangers, so be it. I don't do anything wrong. What do I have to risk? Our next guest found out the hard way what the risk can be, even if you're doing nothing wrong. Joel Feeder is the editor of TheDrive.com. He's an automotive journalist. He test drives cars. And he was tracked by cameras and then cornered by a bunch of squad cars that told him to put his arms up. Joel is with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Joel, this story is unbelievable.
I got to tell you, man, in 15-plus years of being an automotive journalist, this takes the cake. This is, I called my editor-in-chief, and I said, Sunday, I said, I got the craziest story of my entire career. And he said, that's a bold statement. And I told him what happened. He said, wow, you delivered on that statement.
So take us to the beginning, because you, part of your job is test driving cars, and you had a Range Rover that came from a dealer or from the company, just with the typical plate that would be on a manufacturer loaner car, right?
Kind of. It's complicated, as I told the police. The short version is press cars is what which I'm driving on a weekly basis or around the world, are owned by the automaker. So in this case, this car was owned by Jaguar Range Rover. And typically, and this is a generalization, most press cars are plated with license plates corresponding to where the automaker's U.S. headquarters are. So in this scenario, it was New Jersey, and a lot of Porsches are going to be either California or the East Coast, et cetera. So, a lot of Michigan cars built in Detroit, the Stellantis, Ford, GM, the Detroit plates. So this car had a New Jersey plate, and we have front license plate laws here, but because it's plated in Jersey and they don't have front license plate laws, it only had a rear license plate, and it's registered and owned by Jaguar Range Rover.
So how did the cops end up sort of tracking this car and trying to arrest you? What happened here?
Sure. So
maybe start at the end. Start at the end the way you did with your story. So you're just at Kohl's in Plymouth, right?
Yeah. So my wife and I are at Kohl's to turn an Amazon box, right? So we're in Kohl's for maybe 10 minutes. We go on or whatever it took to wait in line to return the Amazon package. Got in the car, put the car in reverse. I checked the rearview mirror, checked the camera, checked around. Everything was clear. Take my foot off the brake. Don't even put my foot on the gas. Like, we rolled, I don't know, 2 feet. If you look at the lead image on my story, it looks like we parked like jerks because I rolled with my wheels turned. So we kind of rolled out of the parking spot, right? And then all of a sudden, the car's alarms, the backup sensors and everything, it went nuts. Like, I'm going to roll over a kid or something. Like someone walked into my path, slammed the brake. Look in the rearview mirror, assuming it's something small that walked into my, I couldn't see it, and I see two cop cars blasting up, with lights going, sirens going in the passenger side. And then I'm like, what the heck? And then I look to the driver's side through the window, and there's two more cop cars coming up on my side. So now we're boxed in. We're boxed and pinned, which is the term we use in the police report. And I look at my wife, and I kid you not, I looked at her, and I said, I wasn't even speeding this time. Like, I did nothing wrong. And she thought, to be fair, she actually thought that was funny. And so one of the few times I can make a speeding joke and get
right, and have it work, yes.
Yeah, it worked. And so, like, you know, I've been pulled over plenty in press cars, whether it's speeding or tagged, whatever, right? And so yep. I always know it's a very complicated situation because the car is registered to the automaker. I have to show, I have a loan agreement that says I'm in it, but it's not my car. So it's a very complicated situation, whether you're getting pulled over speeding, you're in an accident, or anything. So I already knew the situation at hand for me. Put it in park, you know, crack the door, put my hands up, you know, like everything you should do. And to defuse the situation, also, I knew we did nothing wrong. And so, you know, the cops get out of the car. No one drew a gun. They had their hands on the gun. They don't know me. And they said, are you armed? And I said, no. And he said, get out of the car. I said, get out of the car. He said, are you armed? I said, no. He said, can I pat you down? I said, sure. And he passed me down. And I said, it's my phone, my wallet, whatever. And he says, you know, do you have ID? I showed him my ID. I gave him my ID. He said, who are you? We ran through the who are you thing.
Yeah.
Once he determined he knew who I was and I am who I say I am, he said, who owns this car? I'm like, wow, that's a complicated situation.
Right, here we go.
I can explain it, but I mean, you have patience. We got to get through that. And so I explained the whole situation. I'm a journalist, whatever. And we got through it. He's like, he understood that I didn't own the car. I had a reason to be with the car, and I had proof of documentation, at least I said I did, and then I was going to show him once he let me, that I had the rights to have this car and why. And thankfully, one of the supporting officers had heard of thedrive.com, so I got a little lucky there.
That helped, yeah.
Caught a little break. And then we went through it. And then as we went through it, you know, he's like, you know, the plates are stolen. We got to figure out the car is stolen. I'm sitting here thinking, I don't think so, right? Like, I mean, I knew the car wasn't stolen. Is it possible someone could have swapped a plate onto this thing at a gas station or on a truck? Sure, of course, right? Like, these cars travel across the United States and go into random journalist driveways all the time. Absolutely possible. Plausible. Likely? Not really. Probably not. But, like, it could happen. And so, but they quickly determined the car's not stolen. They looked up the VIN. They said the plates were stolen, whatever. And then, of course, I said, well, how did we get here? Right? Like how did we get here? He's like, well, there's Flock cameras in Plymouth. And I'm like, oh, because we reported extensively on Flock, the misuse by cops in Texas and going to prison for stalking people and their exes and their families. We've reported on Signal Trace and tracking people via Bluetooth and their devices and their pets' microchips. So we've reported on this situation on thedrive.com extensively in the last couple of weeks. And we just did a podcast about this a week ago. So, like, with security experts. So I'm very well versed in this.
But for our listeners who maybe aren't as well versed, Flock cameras are, once you know what they look like, you'll start seeing them all over the place. Different suburban communities, different urban communities, but these cameras are all over the country. And then Flock gathers that data, has AI, has computer systems, and they're constantly surveilling and scouring, looking for, like, what they thought they have with you, which is a stolen car or a wanted fugitive, right?
Yeah, so their cameras are typically mounted on top of stoplights, right? So yep. We can go through an intersection. They read license plates. They're called automatic license plate readers. Flock is a company that sells them. There's other companies, Signal Trace, et cetera, right? So just like anything, it's a distributor, a supplier, right, that the cops in a city, a municipality can contract. So Plymouth has 15 of these things in Plymouth right now. I can't speak to other cities around our area, but Plymouth has got 15 is my understanding at the moment. And then it feeds to the cops and it'll flag things. So, like, the cops aren't sitting here watching plates go through the supposed to be watching through intersections. But when something that's in the national database gets flagged as a stolen plate in this scenario or stolen car, right? It'll get flagged and then it'll send it to the cops that are in the area of that flag, right? So these cops were in this area where I went through a stoplight, Flock camera, read the license plate, and flagged it as stolen, sent it to those cops, and then they figured out where the car was parked. One of the cops had informed me that they actually got a flag on it a couple days before that. I think he said 2 days. And so they went looking for me, but they couldn't find me because I went and parked in my garage. Mm. And so when it got flagged again, they already knew the car. They knew what they were looking for this time because the other time they didn't move quick enough and didn't see where I went. And this time the car was parked in a public spot. They found it, right?
Yeah.
Versus my garage where I had the door closed. And so it's my understanding that they actually had them, like, they were staked out. Like, they were sitting on the side of Kohl's. They were waiting for me to get in the car. They were waiting for the car to move. They were waiting to confirm there were people in the car. Except they were trying to control the situation.
Which is smart, right? If indeed 100%. This were a stolen car, this is very smart.
If you stole a car, you're statistically speaking, you're probably armed.
Right.
Like, statistically speaking, right? I'm sure of it. Whether you're dangerous or not, I mean, look, if you're in a stolen car, how safe are you? I don't know, right? Like, but you know, and also this wasn't like a 20-year-old Taurus that someone could have just hotwired. This is a $155,000 brand new car, right? Like, it's much harder to steal a car like this than some 30-year-old Taurus. Also, I should say that. So, you know, because these cars are all electronic control.
Right.
Anyway, so they've been tracking it for days with the flock cameras. I popped up again, and they did a box and pin. And you know, I did everything, and this is going to sound ridiculous. I'm sure people are going to, like, roll their eyes. I did everything right? Like, I was calm. I answered their questions. I didn't, like, you know, these guys are in an uncomfortable situation, too. I have friends that are cops, right? Like, they don't know me. I could have a gun. I could be confrontational. I wasn't.
But here's the bigger issue as we talk with Joel Feeder from The Drive, a local automotive journalist who was pulled over because this whole thing was a data entry error. And and this is where I think this is why I think this should be of great interest and great concern to everybody listening, everybody around Minnesota, because this is the flaw when you let computers drive law enforcement, because there was an incomplete license plate put into the Flock system, as it's all laid out in your story at thedrive.com. But it was an error or an incomplete license plate, and the AI just read part of your license plate because of a quirk of the way the New Jersey plate is. So not only did you do nothing wrong during the interaction, it wasn't a stolen license plate. It was a giant screw up. And think, this could have, if you were not as calm in the moment, this could have had terrible consequences, all because of a screw up, a computer, and this giant surveillance company.
That could have got shot. And honestly, I can't sit here and tell you that I would have been as calm, cool, and collected, or my wife would have, if my kids had been in the car. That would have been a completely different situation. Yeah. And they thankfully were not.
Yeah.
This absolutely all happened because of a human error and those things happen. You and I are both human.
Yep, for sure.
You made mistakes. But that human error, because of Flock's network, was exponentially amplified across the entire country. And then on top of that, the AI that runs the Flock back end of those cameras did not catch the error and then led the cops to the car. So there was like compounding issues that happened here. And I do want to say, like, because I'm a journalist, because it was a press car, because it's a unique plate, like, there is absolutely a part of this that is an edge case, right? But that doesn't detract from what just happened, because edge cases happen. And you need to be prepared and be able to handle an edge case in a situation like this. We're talking about people that could die. Whether it's a cop, by the way, I could have been some fugitive.
That's right.
And I could have been armed and dangerous, right?
That's right.
Or they could have assumed.
Or you could have just been Joel Feeder and you had a gun legally and something could have escalated. Who knows?
But who knows? Thank God none of that happened. But there was a compounding amount of issues that exponentially made this where we got. And there are absolute guardrails that should be put in place electronically. There are system checks that should be put in place at a human level, and it goes to prove that these pieces of technology can be helpful and probably help solve crimes, but they need to have the guardrails and the human interaction to get there.
I hope everybody reads your story. It's at thedrive.com, which is a great site already, but it's just a fascinating story and part of this conversation that I think, it's been a hot one here in the Twin Cities about drones and whether law enforcement should use those. This is already in use, as we know, in Plymouth. Joel Feeder from The Drive, I'm glad it ended okay, and I'm glad you spent some time with us. Thanks, Joel.
Thank you.
Pretty interesting stuff. 5:50, drive time, coming back in just a minute. All right, you're just about 5 minutes away from Steve Thompson. Fill it in for Henry Lake, so looking forward to that. Tonight, as you're out on the back patio, bring the old radio with you and hang out with Stevie T tonight. Continental Diamond Time Check, it's 5:56. Time to get over to Continental Diamond in St. Louis Park, their pre-owned luxury timepiece collection. Do you call it a luxury timepiece? What is the price point where instead of calling it a watch, you call it a timepiece? What do you think that dividing line is?
I'll go back to the Don Shelby term, 2G.
2G.
Anything over 2G
is a luxury timepiece. It's a luxury timepiece. Today I'm wearing what? This may be a luxury timepiece.
There you go.
Tudor. Beautiful Tudor. Lots of good stuff on a only slightly abbreviated show today. Twins were right in this until they weren't, Dan. That's the thing about
it. That's kind of how that works, yeah.
Yeah, let me tell you.
Right in it, not so much. But you know what? They've won two series in a row, four out of their last six games. They're doing all right. And they got the Angels coming to town. The Angels are awful. So
two and a half games out? Crazy.
They're in it.
Byron's on the disabled list again.
Yeah, super bummer. He's going to miss the All-Star game. That stinks for him.
But. It does, because he was such an inspirational part of the All-Star game last year. That's for sure. Have a great day. We'd love it if you'd subscribe to our podcast or check out our videos on our YouTube channel. You can find all sorts of videos, including shorts, at youtube.com/WCCO Radio.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.